Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. This week, Michael Flynn seeks immunity. The president goes after energy policy and his own party. Brexit begins. Republican Senator Richard Burr, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, promised a serious investigation of Russia and the 2016 election.
If we politicize this process, our efforts will likely fail. The public deserves to hear the truth about possible Russian involvement in our elections.
President Trump reverses Obama-era efforts on climate change and goes all in for coal.
My administration is putting an end to the war on coal. Going to have clean coal, really clean coal.
And Britain sets the clock ticking on its exit from the EU. It's Brexit. Here's Prime Minister Theresa May Wednesday before Parliament.
This is an historic moment from which there can be no turning back.
This hour, On Point, our weekly news roundtable with Janet Hook, Rachel Bade, and On Point news analyst Jack Beattie. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. What's your read on the Russia investigations, Michael Flynn, Devin Nunes, coal, Brexit? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Washington is Janet Hook, national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Janet, always great to have you. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Also with us from Washington is Rachel Bade, congressional reporter for Politico. Rachel, welcome back to On Point.
Hey, Tom. Thanks.
And from Hanover, New Hampshire, Jack Beattie joins us. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Janet, and Rachel.
All kinds of furor over the Russia investigations in both houses of Congress this week. Action there. Here's House Intelligence Committee Chairman Devin Nunes. Lots of controversy around him this week, telling CNN's Manu Raju on Tuesday that despite calls from Democrats to recuse himself from the Russia probe, he sees no reason to step down.
Are you going to stay as chairman and run this investigation?
Well, why would I not?
So can this investigation continue as you as chairman?
Why would it not?
Why would it not? Well, ranking Democratic member of the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, called on Nunes to recuse himself, said yesterday, in all things considered, that Congressman Schiff's, here was his explanation for the call.
I suppose the last straw was the revelation that he had obtained whatever material he had obtained at the White House and then gone back to the White House to present the material.
And meanwhile, in the Senate Intelligence Committee revving up its own investigation. Now, North Carolina Senator Richard Byrd, Virginia Democrat Mark Warner, they affirmed by a bipartisan commitment as they launched into this to investigate interference in the 2016 election. Here's Warner.
We will get to the bottom of this. Richard and I have known each other a long time. And the chairman and I both have a serious concern about what the Russians have done and continue to do around the world.
Over all of this, Michael Flynn seeking immunity in exchange for testimony before congressional investigators. Janet Hook, your newspaper and the New York Times were right in the thick of this. What do we know about what Michael Flynn asked for and why?
Well, what we know is that he has asked for immunity from prosecution in exchange for giving testimony to the House and Senate committees and, I believe, the FBI. We also know that nobody's yet taken him up on the offer. And so the assumption is that he's got something, a story to tell. His lawyer said he has a story to tell, but that that there's something else that he worries about exposing, that he has some legal exposure. Now, the thing that's particularly interesting about this is both Mr. Flynn and Donald Trump have in the past said, well, you never ask for immunity unless you're guilty of something.
Just last fall, we heard Michael Flynn say that. It's all over Twitter these days.
That's right. So if we believe Michael Flynn, he's got something he's trying to hide. And then this morning, just this morning, Donald Trump tweeted out kind of saying that, yes, that Flynn should be asking for immunity because this is all a witch hunt.
All right. That's one way of looking at it. Rachel Bade, how's this being read? I mean, this is the guy who led the lock her up chant famously at the Republican National Convention. I mean, it came on more than once, but he was right up there when it was going. If he's got something, why wouldn't one of these committees extend an offer of immunity to him to hear it if he's got something important to say? Or are they saying no thanks because they're not sure he really does have the goods?
I think that's yet to be determined. His request for immunity certainly raises eyebrows, as you guys were just talking about. But I think what's really interesting on the Hill is you've got this sort of tale of two committees going on where you have the Senate Intelligence Panel and the House Intelligence Panel on two totally different tracks, both trying to investigate this issue. You have the Senate on the one hand trying to keep sort of a nonpartisan, apolitical image. And then on the House side, there's been serious questions raised about Devin Nunes' ability to, keep this nonpartisan. He certainly, at times, people say, you know, it looks like he's in cahoots with the White House trying to cover up for them, whether it's blocking Sally Yates, the former acting attorney general who, was the one who pointed out that Michael Flynn had potentially or had specifically lied about talking to Russian officials, blocking her from coming in, canceling a hearing where she was supposed to appear. And it's it's a problem for the House. You know, they're trying to, in theory, keep this, you know, on even handed. And right now, that committee is looking worse than, you know, the Benghazi probe, which was extremely partisan. So we even saw the Senate at this point, at some point this week, started joking about this. I think Richard Burr and Senator Warner were having some sort of like press gaggle. And Senator Burr, who's leading the Senate panel, said something along the lines of, "I'm only going to answer questions about our investigation." And he smirked, and Warner laughed, and everybody knew that people wanted to talk about Nunes and the latest sort of things he had said about, defending the White House, defending Trump. And there's
is the House effort effectively dead at this point? Could it go on with an effective investigation of the circumstances of last year's Russian role?
You know, I think it has lost so much credibility at this point that I personally do not see it happening. I covered the Benghazi probe, and, you know, they tried to fight tooth and nail to try to keep their head above water. But, you know, partisanship totally overdid that. Nunes has a history with Trump as well. He was a early supporter. He was on the transition team. And every time there's a new headline about Russia and the Trump administration, he's one of the first people, you know, calling reporters and defending them. So the image of whether they can proceed fairly, I think, is an authentic one. And I think people are going to have to look to the Senate if they want to see this done on a nonpartisan basis.
Jack, I want to come to you, but lots of callers here, and I want to begin to get them right in. Norcross, Georgia, Michael's calling. Michael, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. It's always a pleasure. Just want to ask your panel what they think about the possibility of Michael Flynn basically getting immunity and then just being the sacrificial goat and taking the blame for any wrongdoing that may have happened and basically just covering for everybody. If he basically gets immunity, he can basically say whatever he wants and then could possibly just, you know, make this whole thing pretty much pointless.
And then sail off into the sunset. Michael, let us take it right there. Jack, is that the way you see this potentially working? I mean, at this point, nobody's taking him up on it. And, you know, so I don't know where it goes, but if they should grant him immunity, they won't do that for nothing, Jack.
That's right. And the lawyers I've been watching on television say that immunity is only granted in cases like this if you've got something significant, namely if we can get someone above you. And there's only one person, it appears, above him.
He was director of the National Security Council.
That's right. That's right. Now, of course, he's got a lot of reason to talk. I mean, Janet's paper last week in a little noticed item, but I thought an eye-opening one, brought out that Mr. Flynn, who was an agent of the paid and undeclared agent of the Turkish government, last fall had a meeting with Jim Woolsey, the former CIA director, and an official, I believe, of the Turkish government, and they discussed kidnapping the cleric in the Poconos, whom the Turkish government wants to extradite, blames for all the woes of Turkey.
Yeah.
That right there is a felony. I mean, you know, to be conspiracy to kidnap somebody. Then he may have lied to the FBI. He may have, he appears to have, violated the law about declaring that you're a foreign agent. The point is, there are a lot of things that he's got a lot of exposure, and I don't know that he's going to be willing to take the heat for all of that, because that could be very significant.
But take the heat. If he gets immunity, what's the heat to take? I mean, he would take public heat, but he wouldn't go to jail.
Well, I guess that's right. But whether they would take an agreement, I guess, is what I mean. Whether either the FBI or the committees would take an agreement from him on those terms is something else. There is one theory I've heard, and this was put out on Morning Joe this morning, that the House could suddenly get religion and say, we're going to go back into this business, grant him immunity, and a grant of immunity to him could foul up the FBI investigation. That's a serious problem when, you know, one branch can foul up the... So in other words, the criminal problem would be eliminated because the House committee acting again for the president would be scuppering the FBI.
Janet Hook, national political reporter, Wall Street Journal, how do you read all this? Is this still gaining traction? Or as it stretches out over weeks and Americans think about, well, we've got a lot of other things to deal with, does this gradually lose steam, the whole investigation into Russia's role, Janet?
Well, right now, this latest chapter just fuels this view of the Trump inner circle as being something of a circular firing squad. You know, it's sort of, there's all of this infighting and backbiting and you just don't know where this is going. Now, the question that you raise is kind of, what does it matter outside of Washington, or how does it affect the rest of his agenda? And I do think it has a serious impact on his ability to move forward on his agenda. And in the end, I think that's what the people who voted for him are looking at the most. What is he going to get done? And so far, every issue has been a little bit of a box canyon for him.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Michael Flynn seeks immunity. The Senate takes the lead on Russia investigations. Trump and Cole, Trump versus the Republican Freedom Caucus, Brexit, and more. Rachel Bade is with us from Politico, covers Congress there. Janet Hook is here, national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Jack Beatty's here, and you can join us. What are you thinking on Michael Flynn, the whole Russian investigation? Is it right to call it a mess yet? We hope not. What do you make of President Trump's U-turn, national policy on energy and climate change, of Jeff Sessions saying he'll go after sanctuary cities? The House kind of in disarray on the investigation front when it comes to Russia. The Senate just revving up, but they have had some testimony already. Here was an interesting moment. Clint Watts, expert witness in yesterday's Senate Intelligence Committee hearing on Russia, he said several Russians linked to the investigation into Kremlin activity have been killed in the last 3 months. Follow the trail of dead Russians, he says.
Follow the trail of dead Russians. There's been more dead Russians in the past 3 months that are tied to this investigation, who have assets and banks all over the world. They are dropping dead even in Western countries.
Okay, this could still get pretty interesting. We've got a lot to look at, but a bunch of callers on this. Gary in Charleston, South Carolina. Gary, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I'm glad that other people are talking about the whole dead Russians thing, because with the amount of dead guys that are piling up, at some point somebody's got to say, hey, we got a problem. And it only is going to start in the countries away from us, but when is it going to start happening in the U.S.? Because we've already had a guy who said, hey, I want immunity. What does that mean? I mean, do we have to worry about him getting taken out? Are we going to have to worry about that sort of thing on our U.S. soil?
That's the kind of worry you never want to have when it comes to political opposition on U.S. soil. But we've got it, Gary. Mark in Lexington, North Carolina. Mark, you're on.
Hi, Tom. It's really nice to talk to you in person. I have a very simple hypothesis. Immunity equals treason in this case. I think Michael Flynn has provenly demonstrated he has broken a number of laws regarding the registration as a foreign agent, whether or not he kidnaps the cleric. I think if the shoe fits and it's immunity, to quote him, immunity means you're guilty. I think he's guilty of treason. And I think his boss, which would be so-called President Trump, and I say so-called because it's very frustrating, he should be gone, and his vice president should be impeached.
Okay, that's a lot. That's a big bill right there. Rachel, is it? We don't know in Flynn's case, and it could be that he's afraid of legal entanglement that's over things, I don't know, that are well shy of treason. But you hear that anger right there in some quarters, that the question is even out there. How far does this go, Rachel? Do you think that there's the appetite on Capitol Hill or beyond in the FBI to really continue down this road? How high, how far?
As for appetite, I think it depends on which side of the Capitol. Obviously at the House, Nunes, I don't see him, really digging into this in terms of broken laws and treason, et cetera, allegations of that sort of thing. I think that when it comes to, Michael Flynn and asking for immunity, they're incoming administration officials are not supposed to be negotiating with foreign leaders, things like sanctions. And, that is something he could potentially want immunity for, because people could argue that he had broken some laws there. As for treason, I think the big question in all this is whether the Trump campaign knew what Russia was doing when they were trying to undermine the elections, and did any officials have any sort of coordination with that? I mean, that's like the million-dollar question. We haven't seen any evidence of that yet. So I do think it's a little early to, accuse folks of this, but I do think that, the Senate in particular is going to try to get to the bottom of that. And if Capitol Hill just erupts in partisan bickering on both sides of the rotunda, then the FBI is certainly going to continue looking at this. I think FBI Director James Comey made that perfectly clear when he acknowledged what they were investigating, and has shown that he's not afraid to take on things that are politically sensitive, as he did with the Clinton investigation.
One more on this front, and we'll look beyond. Maria in Plattsburgh, New York. Maria, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks, Tom, for having me on. I was just listening to the previous caller, and I agree with her. I think treason is a little bit far-fetched right now, but Michael Flynn definitely has some dubious behavior out there in his regards to dealing with Russia and Turkey, which just came up, I believe, recently. He was doing something for the Turkish president,
yep.
Erdogan.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it just, you get that old feeling, it's just out there. There's something behind this whole thing. It's just too much. If it stinks, it stinks, or whatever that old saying is.
Maria, we've got it. Jack Beatty, does this country have the political balance right now to sort this out right? I mean, if it's too much being made of what went on, if there wasn't collusion, then we got ourselves, in a frenzy over what? If there was, then we've got another kind of really big problem. Do you see the balance, the gravitas, the capacity in Washington to sort this out correctly right now?
Well, it's going to be a test, really, of that proposition, and a test of whether the Senate under the Republican Party can balance the executive. The question of the president's culpability, I thought Mr. Watt's testimony was interesting in that regard. He said
this
effectively—
This is the dead Russians guy.
Yeah, he said effectively that Mr. Trump was echoing, parroting, I think was the word he used, the cliches, the shibboleths, the lies that Russia was putting out and has been for years about our election system, notably that it's rigged. And as we remember, as we approached Election Day, that was constant with Mr. Trump. It's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. And Watt pointed to other things where Trump was echoing what the Russians were saying in their fake news and in their propaganda. Now, does that mean collusion? No. It may mean, though, that Trump has been, to use a Kremlin term, a useful idiot for the Kremlin. that he simply, you know, has been delegitimizing the election ahead of the election, just as they wanted to do. And you could argue that that's still going on, that we're now talking about a paralyzed presidency, assailed by scandal, immunity talk within 70 days of taking office, stalemated on his legislative agenda, at least for now, and Russia. In effect, the Russians are...
They've taken over.
They've taken over.
Is it fair, Janet Hook, you've got a lot of experience here, to call this a paralyzed presidency at this point?
Well, it's not paralyzed because he keeps moving. Like every day, he kind of strikes out in a new direction. So
yeah, but moving and meaningful movement are two different things, maybe.
Yeah, no, he's getting nowhere fast on any one of his priorities. You know, the travel ban is still blocked in court. The health care bill just died. You know, his wall. You know, Congress is probably not going to pay for the wall. I mean, so on what front that requires anything other than executive action has he made any progress? Not much. Now, I suppose pretty soon he'll probably get the Senate to approve his Supreme Court choice, Neil Gorsuch. But other than that, he's really running into trouble everywhere he turns.
Saying this week that he'll go back to health care and he'll get it done. It'll be easy, he said. Of course, we heard that before, and it didn't turn out to be so easy. But here he was telling senators at a dinner at the White House on Tuesday that future efforts to get that health care change won't be so difficult.
I know that we're all going to make a deal on health care. That's such an easy one. So I have no doubt that that's going to happen very quickly. I think it will, actually. I think it's going to happen because we've all been promising, Democrat, Republican, we've all been promising that to the American people.
That's such an easy one. Rachel Bade, you're covering Congress. Is there a way back into this where he could circumvent the Freedom Caucus and pull the rabbit out of the hat? Here's the health reform after all.
You know, I had to refrain myself from laughing when I heard that, an easy one on Capitol Hill. No, I mean, this totally erupted. We are calling it the Friday fiasco when Ryan had to pull the House GOP Obamacare replacement.
Just a week ago.
Right. And there's no indication that any dynamic on the Hill, has changed at all. What I will say has changed is that Trump seems to have gone from using this sort of carrot approach to allure conservatives to this stick approach. Mm-hmm. During negotiations, he kept sort of giving concessions to the right, hoping to, you know, get them on board. They were calling this, of course, Obamacare Lite the whole time. But it was never enough. And he didn't get enough votes because the conservatives blocked this. And now he's ticked. He's tweeting at them, hinting at primaries, saying we have to, quote, fight them in 2018. Last night, he specifically named the ringleaders of the House Freedom Caucus, this conservative group that brought them down, Jim Jordan, Mark Meadows, Raul Labrador. And he used to have a relationship with these guys, which is really interesting. Like, Labrador was considered at one time, Trump was looking at him for Interior Secretary. Meadows campaigned with him on the campaign trail.
And now he's going after them by name in tweets. I mean, he's calling them straight out.
Yes, that's exactly right. And it's sort of interesting because I followed the Freedom Caucus for years, and, you know, they drove out Speaker Boehner. These are the guys that drove out Speaker Boehner. They've tanked a number of bills, Republican priority bills in the past that they think are not conservative enough. But every time they were sort of praised by constituents, and I guess now the question is, you know, they're taking on the president of the United States, who's popular in their districts, by the way. Does this blow back on them? And I think it's starting to, because you just, you know, talking to them on the Hill, usually they're very, like, you know, chatty and a little, like, chipper and spunky and very, you know, willing to stick it to the man. And this week, after getting just pounded by Trump, they seem to be, they're quiet. They look tired. You can just tell the pressure is dragging on them.
Though we heard some notes of defiance from the Freedom Caucus this week. Here was Michigan Congressman Justin Amash, one of the members of the caucus, telling NBC yesterday Trump's attacks would not be effective with most people, with him maybe.
Most people don't take well to being bullied. It may allow a child to get his way, but that's not how our government works.
Justin Amash from Michigan right there, bullied, no thanks. And then you had this interesting thing, House Speaker Paul Ryan on CBS this morning, yesterday, saying that he was concerned, on health care at least, that if the Republicans don't get their ranks in order, President Trump will make a deal with Democrats on health care. Here was Ryan.
If we don't do this, then he'll just go work with Democrats to try and change Obamacare. And that's not going to, that's hardly a conservative thing. This is a can-do president who's a business guy who wants to get things done. And I know that he wants to get things done with the Republican Congress. But if this Republican Congress allows the perfect to be the enemy of the good, I worry we'll push the president into working with Democrats.
Janet Hook, can you see this president reaching out to Democrats to find the majority he needs to do some things here? Can you see Democrats reaching back?
No and no. He has talked about reaching out to Democrats, and I guess he's had some Democrats up to the White House to talk about issues. But there just haven't been major concessions in terms of policy and principle, so that it really does just amount to a gesture. And right now, the Democrats are so they're so determined in their opposition to him on so many fronts, not just because he's been so unyielding on policy and principle, but also because they've got a political base that is totally fired up in opposition to Trump and not very eager to see any ground be given. So I don't see much give on either side of this, and especially on health care, which is one of those incredibly complicated issues. It was just, as Rachel was saying, kind of laughable when Trump said that this is an easy one. It's a really, really hard issue, even if you had lawmakers of two parties with it, more goodwill than there is right now.
Jack Beatty, this is a populist president, not prisoner of any particular ideology, by all appearances anyway. Can you see some kind of recalculation here where he throws over the checkerboard and the party lines and does deals in new ways?
Well, it would be incoherence to the 10th power. I mean, and incoherent with his campaign promises. After all, the strongest of them was repeal and replace Obamacare. The next one was build a wall. Democrats are against that, too. Now, maybe on trade, he could make a deal with them and on infrastructure. But beyond that, I agree with Janet. It's just very hard to see common ground, and especially since the Democratic base is scorching that ground for the Democratic politicians and saying, don't you dare do any business with Mr. Trump.
Peter in Easton, Maryland. Peter, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. My question is, I think President Trump's reversal of U.S. climate change policy by reviving coal is an overall job killer, not a job creator, because it takes more people and more jobs to get energy from renewables like wind and solar than it does to get energy from coal. So why is Trump killing jobs? And I think to answer that, you have to look at who benefits and who loses from burning coal, and there's your answer.
Peter, let us pick it up right there. Rachel Bade, we were looking at coal. The president talking a lot about it this week, clean coal, and talking about it in reference to jobs. But when you turn to the industry, there's a lot of automation going on there. Even if it can resist market forces and come back somehow, are there real jobs there in significant numbers? What are the politics of this, Rachel?
So he's certainly reversing a trend that we've seen not just here in the United States but around the world over the past few years. There's trying to tilt this sort of scale back toward coal, away from cleaner energy types. I think that even though he's trying to make this change, I think that a lot of climate change experts and energy experts, they sort of realize that this is going against the trend of where the world is going. And so a lot of people are going to continue working on clean energy, et cetera. And it's unclear, how big of a setback this is going to be. I will say that I think that there are bigger geopolitical ramifications beyond the United States with this new policy Trump is initiating. China now poised to take the lead on climate change. That's just sort of ironic, given they're the biggest greenhouse gas emitter out there. And I guess the question is, do they follow suit? And if so, what does this mean for our environment?
This On Point podcast is sponsored by ZipRecruiter, making it quick and easy to find quality candidates. Instantly post your job to over 200 job sites, including social media networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with a single click. Select, screen, and rate candidates with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard and find the right hire fast. Find out why ZipRecruiter has been used by Fortune 500 companies and hundreds of thousands of small and medium-sized businesses. Get started for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
Hi, it's Tom. I'm glad you're listening to this On Point podcast. Really happy to have you here. You know, a lot of people barely know podcasts exist. They've never listened to one. Here at On Point, we want to change that. All this month, we're inviting our listeners to tell a friend about a podcast they love. Do it in real life or on social media, and make sure you let us know what you're recommending. Tell us using the hashtag TryPod. That's hashtag TryPod. And thanks. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, lots of tongues wagging after White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer scolded American Urban Network correspondent April Ryan in a press briefing Tuesday.
You're asking me a question, and I'm going to answer it, which is the president, I'm sorry, please stop shaking your head again.
Stop shaking your head. That got a lot of attention. Elon Musk's company, SpaceX, made history with the successful launch and landing of a space rocket to be used. Again, Musk celebrated the significance.
Liftoff of Falcon 9, the world's first reflight of orbital-class rocket.
It means you can fly and refly an orbit-class booster, which is the most expensive part of the rocket. This is going to be ultimately a huge revolution in spaceflight.
Elon Musk talking revolution in space, and after Congress voted to head off internet privacy protections, late-night host Steve Colbert joked about what Americans should do now.
Now might be a good time to clear your browser history. Just hit that button or pull the lever. I don't know. I've never used it. I've got nothing to hide. I burned my computer this morning.
What do you think on sanctuary cities, on Mike Pence and Planned Parenthood? North Carolina, has it fixed its bathroom bill problem? Does the EU survive the Brexit? Does the UK? And what job title would you give Ivanka Trump with their office now in the White House? Janet Hook is here from The Wall Street Journal. Rachel Bate from Politico. Jack Beatty's here. Let's go to our listeners. David in Lexington, Kentucky. David, you're on. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Tom. Hi, and hi, Jack. My moods have gone into the toilet since the election. I'm really upset with a lot of things that the president is doing, and I agree with everything that's been said. But I'm very happy to see Jeff Sessions going after sanctuary cities. I'm tired of the United States aiding and abetting illegal immigration. And I want to point out that immigration is the thing that got Trump elected. There's been too much of it. And if the Barbara Jordan Commission under Clinton had been followed, where she recommended having legal immigration and strict enforcement of illegal immigration, Trump never would have gone beyond being a reality star.
David, we've got it, and I appreciate your call. I mean, it is really an interesting political issue. Certainly, he played that violin real hard in the campaign last year, and he's now president. The attorney general saying this week that he'll go after federal funding for sanctuary cities. Here he was on Monday announcing that the Department of Justice would deny grants for sanctuary cities that refuse to share information about a person's immigration status with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE.
I strongly urge our nation's states and cities and counties to consider carefully the harm they are doing to their citizens by refusing to enforce our immigration laws and to rethink these policies. Such policies make their cities and states less safe. Public safety as well as national security are at stake and put them at risk of losing federal dollars.
At risk of losing federal dollars. That can be a big hammer, but interestingly, there is still real resistance to this out there. Seattle Mayor Ed Murray announced a lawsuit against the federal government on Wednesday in response to the Justice Department's threat to withhold funding from sanctuary cities. Here's the mayor of Seattle.
It is particularly galling to hear the attorney general say that Seattle isn't prioritizing safety. When we welcome immigrants into our community, dedicate resources to helping immigrants on a pathway to citizenship, and warmly integrate immigrant school children into our schools and classrooms, we do this because as a welcoming city, It fosters safety.
And there's the standoff. Janet Hook, how do you interpret the politics of this at this point? Jeff Sessions is going pedal to the metal here, threatening to cut off federal funds. We're hearing about ICE agents being in courthouses, and even when immigrants show up to get their green cards, which is the legal process toward legal residency here, some being nabbed even there. How are the politics of this evolving, or are they, Janet?
Well, I think that the caller, David from Kentucky, mm-hmm. May not be exaggerating when he says, if not for this issue, Donald Trump would still be a reality TV star. It really was the thing that launched him into prominence and grabbed voters almost like by the shoulders and said, you know, to say, this is an issue I know many of you are worried about and I'm going to do something about it. I think as the campaign went on, there were lots of other issues, but it really was from the beginning a really, really central part of his appeal. But now that he's president, I think he's got this situation where they're to deliver on the promises that he made. There are things that he can control and more and less, and things that he can control and things that he can't. So his first step out of the box was this travel ban that was blocked in court. He rewrote it. It's still blocked in court, and that was the step that most encapsulated the rhetoric and the tone that he set. During the campaign, the second one was build the wall.
Yep.
And on that front, we see kind of him meeting obstacles in terms of funding and the practical logistics. So it may be that this sanctuary cities policy that Jeff Sessions was talking about is notable not so much because of it being a new policy. I mean, he's talking, though, about enforcing it much more strictly than the Obama administration did.
You know, even the funding for the wall seems to be in some question, Rachel. You've been writing about that. Is it possible that Congress would, as your headline have it, stiff Trump on the wall's funding?
Yeah, it's absolutely possible. I mean, they're coming off of a huge loss on their Obamacare repeal effort when that blew up last week. And there's a feeling amongst some senior Republicans on the Hill that after this huge loss, Trump can't handle a government shutdown fight. If it were to come to that, Democrats on the Hill, and you're going to need eight of them in the Senate to vote for a government funding package that they have to do by the end of April. They've already said they're not going to back any sort of funding bill that includes money for the wall. Notably, Mick Mulvaney, Trump's budget director, has sort of signaled that perhaps we'll push this in the future. He said the big push for the wall, which is going to cost about $20 billion, mind you, will come in fiscal 2019. Right now, we're looking at fiscal 2017. So they're only asking for about $1.4 billion, which is a very small portion of that larger pot. Republicans on the Hill, a lot of them are telling me they don't think it's worth shutting down the government over this smaller amount.
So, in other words, they wouldn't give him the $1.4 billion?
Essentially, after we wrote that story, interestingly, we heard that some White House officials reached out to the Hill and said, "What is this?" And it's going to come down to a question. Trump is going to have to decide: does he want this small amount so much right now that he's willing to engage in a government shutdown fight with Democrats, because Democrats are saying they will not vote for this. Now, traditionally, Republicans get blamed for a government shutdown. However, some people on the Hill who back Trump and want to do this now point to the fact that some Senate Democrats actually voted for an authorization of this wall that was passed in 2006 under President George W. Bush. And so they think that if it comes to a shutdown, maybe they could win this fight and pressure the Democrats to say, look, this was our number one campaign promise. This is why people elected, you know, Trump. You need to do what the American people have said they wanted. So, but regardless, even if they win that, it's going to be a really ugly couple of weeks, and there's no assurances at the end that he actually gets that small amount of money he's asking for.
So many layers to this. It's a lot more complicated than leading a build that wall chant at a campaign rally. Jack, I want to come to you on the president overall, but a couple calls here first. Julie, St. Petersburg, Florida. Julie, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I come from a tourist town, and quite frankly, I just got back from Las Vegas, where at our luxury resort, where we normally check in at 2 o'clock,
okay,
the room wasn't ready until 4:30 because all the housekeeping staff had been deported.
So what does that leave you thinking about immigration policy, Julie?
that leaves me thinking that, like you said, it's easy to chant "build that wall," but these policies have real life repercussions, and we're starting to feel them now.
That's a story to bear in mind. There, just back from Vegas, and couldn't it get in? At least the word that you're understanding with the housekeeping staff had been deported. Oh boy, Chris in Muscatine, Iowa. Chris, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I worked with immigrant students all my life. I taught English as a second language.
Yeah.
Back in the 80s, I remember when the sanctuary cities were established. And they were established because there'd be a lot of crime going on in the city. And the people who were there knew who was committing these crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But they were scared to go to the police, or they might be victims. But they were scared to go to the police because they could get deported. So what happened was they set it up that these people could come forward, they could talk, you know, to the police, they could cooperate with the police, and then everybody in that town was safer. And that's why they were established. That's what they are. That's what they still are. And that's the purpose. The purpose is to keep the citizens of a town safe, because they can get cooperation from the immigrant community.
Yeah. Chris, you've got clarity on that. Jeff Sessions suggests he has clarity in a different direction, I guess. I mean, he's bringing the hammer down on them anyway. But yes, Jack Beatty, that's the argument that's been made for a long time. You know, there are a lot of circumstances that are complicated. And I just wonder what you're thinking about this president, Jack. He sometimes looks a little beleaguered lately. I mean, I know he spent a lot of time at Mar-a-Lago, and he gets on the jet and he gets out of town, but he is really up against the realities now of just how complicated governing can be. It's a lot more than doing a real estate deal.
Oh, indeed, and a lot more than you know, his effusions on the campaign trail. And, you know, the excuse was always available for him, and I think he's indicated it indirectly when he said, boy, this healthcare stuff is more complicated than I realized. He can almost declare a kind of blanket abstention from the campaign. Well, that was all campaign. Now I'm doing business. Instead, there does seem to be this almost literal-minded focus on I'm gonna fulfill my promises, no matter how as you suggest, at variance with reality their possibility is. And I think he sees that and legitimately as a source of his legitimacy. He's got the cloud, the Russian cloud. The one thing he can do is to try to do everything he said he was going to do. And he seems to be trying to do that and running up very hard against reality, notably here, where in this realm, recently, just this week, the Los Angeles Times quoted a detective there saying, you know, they can't make any headway on cases because people won't cooperate with them because of this immigration shadow and the immigration authorities now opposing as policemen, which makes all that more difficult.
Janet Hook with The Wall Street Journal, you've been out talking with Trump voters, about what they hope the president will learn from his difficulty in the health care bill and maybe on other issues going forward. What are they saying? Trump backers, about what they're seeing as the president grapples with the White House responsibilities in Washington.
It's really interesting. I have been checking in periodically through the Trump presidency with some Trump voters who I met or connected with during the campaign,
yeah,
just to see how their views evolve. And what Jack was saying is a good point, which is that Trump feels like his first obligation is to at least try to deliver on his promises because he made them so bluntly. And so far, I would say that most of the Trump voters that I've been in touch with appreciate the effort and they have some patience with his ability to deliver. I do think that the failure of the health care bill was a big disappointment and one that they hope. I mean, it kind of showed that. So the good news about Donald Trump is he's an outsider. The bad news about Donald Trump is he's an outsider and doesn't know how to run things in Washington. So I do think that his supporters are still kind of with him and just hoping that he learned some kind of lesson about and maybe the lesson is that Congress is just as dysfunctional as they thought it was. And actually, there was a fair amount. I found when I surveyed these people specifically about the health care bill, a lot of the blame was then placed on Paul Ryan. So I think Paul Ryan has something to worry about in Trump space as well.
Rachel, we got Ivanka Trump headed into an office in the White House, we're told, not as an employee, but I guess even that may be debatable. What kind of reception is that getting around Washington? Is this something the president needs? Is this, what about the ethics here? She's, you know, how do people look at Ivanka getting closer to the Oval Office?
Oh, well, when we found out that she was going to be playing a central role at the in this White House, of course, it raised a lot of eyebrows, just as, you know, her husband, Jared Kushner, playing, you know, taking the lead on a whole bunch of issues, you know, these days. I think that people wanted her to get some sort of official title. And so there you go. You have a step towards that to be if she's going to work in the White
House. And high security clearance.
Right. I mean, yeah, of course, there's a lot of people on the Hill who won't say things publicly, but, you know, question what her sort of credentials are on this and whether or not she can really be this sort of guidance for the White House that Trump wants her to be at his right hand, a seat at the table there. So I honestly don't think that a lot of people will, unless they're Democrats, you won't see a lot of Republicans on the Hill, you know, calling her out and saying, you know, she shouldn't be working at the White House. Honestly, they're too scared to do that.
But we're on new territory here, new turf. Jack, across the pond, the Brexit, the two-year clock for negotiating underway this week. It can seem very distant from Americans, but for the European Union, this is a big deal. And the UK putting a lot on the line with its, is it fair to call it a gamble, Jack?
It certainly seems to be a gamble. The predictions are that the British economy is going to be seriously hurt. Now, the predictions were that it would be hurt this year. That hasn't happened. So maybe they'll escape the worst. But I did watch that debate in the House of Commons, and what struck me was the Scottish National Party. I don't know if that's its official name, but Angus Robertson, a formidable Scots name, stood up and essentially looked at the Tory benches that were heckling him and saying, "My people back in Scotland see this. They see how you English representatives are heckling a representative of Scotland, and it is going to be remembered." Ooh, boy. Perhaps the United Kingdom won't be united so long.
Some in Scotland not at all wanting to lose that European Union membership. They would if they go along with the UK. Talk there of yet another referendum on Scottish independence and maybe the very unity of the United Kingdom itself as the UK begins the formal process of unhitching from the European Union. Big action there. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Janet Hook, national political reporter for The Wall Street Journal. It's great to have you, Janet. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Rachel Bade, congressional reporter for Politico. Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks so much. Joy to be here.
And Jack Beattie, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at On Point Radio. I'm at Tom Ashbrook, NPR. This is On Point.